Accession number 27249, Mr. Tom Tate, Real 2. Now, we're talking about your time with the wireless school. You think it was number 2, we'll check that later, wireless school at Blackpool from August 1940 onwards. We were talking about the training you went there, you know, you went through.
The wireless school, remember, there were thousands of men. There were thousands of men learning wireless up in Blackpool there.
Take us through the actual learning the wireless. Where was there a central place you went to? Because you were only in billets.
So in the Winter Gardens.
That's where
it was. Winter Gardens. It's famous, well known. You know, that's where all the fun takes place.
Take me through the.
I forget the organist, Reginald somebody. I forget.
Reginald Dixon.
Reginald Dixon. There you are. You know more about it than I do.
Tell me about how they trained you on the wireless. How did they start? Because I presume you didn't know much about.
This is the wireless school. Well, we go to learn Morse. Therefore, you sit down there with earphones on your hands, and they send you, dit da. Did it. A, B. Did I? So, and you would that would be repeated, and you were expected, believe it, to learn the alphabet in only a few days. There was pressure, and in the end, you passed out from Blackpool before you went to. Now I'll say to number 2 wireless school, which was Yatesbury down at Wiltshire.
So that wasn't number 2 school at Blackpool.
No,
right,
no.
Okay.
I'll have to find out what that is.
Now, you had to learn the Morse code. What else were you
Morse
learning?
Code.
This is at Blackpool.
I'm only learning the Morse code there. Up to 20 words a minute.
Now, did you find that difficult? Because some people could seem to be able to do it quickly and some people have a lot of trouble.
As in all learning, some people picked it up quickly. Some people had a previous knowledge, but other people were unable to get on with it and they rather had mental troubles. In other words, they took the earphones off and they said, it'll drive me mad. And people were like that, it'll drive me mad. And I think those people were taken off the course.
Now, how did you do?
There again, I was always a conscientious person, conforming and conscientious, thought it was a part of my job, and wished to succeed. And I did very well. Remember, I was taking commercial subjects in my job, in my civil employment, so this was more civil employment.
Now, was there anything else you were learning on either the wireless or the gunnery side at Blackpool?
At Blackpool.
Because you were there quite a while, weren't you?
I was there 6 months. I think I was there about 4 months, yes.
So, till December?
Yeah, till about December, that's right.
Anything else you were learning there?
I think we learnt semaphore.
Tell me about that.
Oh, well, with a couple of flags, one in each hand, you signalled to your pal, who was about 50 yards away, and sent him a message. I didn't get on very well with that, unfortunately. I don't think they took it too seriously. I think semaphore was going out of the RS. Okay in the Navy, but Air Force... No, we had Aldis lamp in the Air Force, so we probably had an Aldis lamp, and we were practicing our Morse with the lamp.
Anything else? What about telephony, you know, voice procedure and things like that? Because
no, I don't think I had anything to do with voice at all.
It was all signal. It was all Morse.
One
way or the other.
It was in those days, yes.
So anything else you were doing at Blackpool?
Well, I don't think we did. No, what else?
How did you get on with the other recruits? You know, you're all thrown together.
Yes.
How did you get on with them?
Well, we didn't meet after hours because they were scattered all around the town. But during the day, I got on very well with them, and I liked those fellows.
Were they from the same sort of background as yourself, would you
say? Yes, they seemed to. But they did seem to come more from the Midlands and more industrial towns, possibly, I feel. I didn't find anyone quite like myself living in South East London.
Were there any rougher types? You know, I mean, people who come from rough backgrounds?
No, all gentlemen. No, they were all gentlemen, honestly.
Do you make any lasting pals there, or was it just sort of passing?
Well, I did have lasting pals at the time, but it was passing. Unfortunately, that was what life was like in the RAF as far as I was concerned. People, you got to know people, and then they went off, and you never saw them anymore. They were lost. Their fate.
What about the NCOs and the instructors? How did you get on with them? Were they good at their job? Were they kindly or rough?
Yes, our corporal, he was the one who trained us in discipline, marching and all those sort of things. He was a lovely old fellow. But one thing that amused me with him was one day he said to us, you're all being asked now to volunteer for aircrew, because every aircrew person has to be a volunteer. It's all right to say you want to be an aircrew, but you volunteer officially. And he said, and every man here, and there were 50 men in our squad, he said, every man here, he's in the RAF, and he's going to volunteer to be aircrew. Now, he said later, sometime into us, that he'd never flown in his life. And he'd been in the Air Force his whole life. He'd never flown in an aircraft. How remarkable.
You had no qualms about volunteering for aircrew duty. That's what you wanted.
Yes. That was the appeal.
Did you you didn't do any gunnery at all? What did you get out in the town much? I mean, were you allowed out? Out in a sense. You were in billets. I mean, would you? What sort of recreation was it?
What did we do in the evenings? Well, I rather think that I didn't do very much in the evenings at all. To start with, I think we were dead tired after the day's routine, and we had no television in the billet. I know, but I honestly don't remember. We would go down to the Winter Gardens, and I certainly would go down to the Winter Gardens to have a dance with somebody, but the place was absolutely packed with service people and ladies and service ladies, WAFs, all those. So there was plenty to do and see.
What were the dances like? Because that sort of thing doesn't happen anymore. What was a dance at the Winter Garden like?
Well, dances don't happen anymore, do you say? What happened?
Well, but you know, I mean, things down have changed. Tell us about what it was like for you then.
Well, you just go down there and everybody would be dancing around doing probably a foxtrot, a waltz, those type of dances. You didn't see boogie or pop or anything like that. That hadn't come yet, hadn't arrived yet.
Would you drink? I mean, did you drink or were you teetotal?
Well, I've never been teetotal and I've never been a drinker. I would have a social drink now and again, yes. And you had to be feel a little bit important by holding a half a pint of weak beer in your hand. Remember, the beer in those days was very, very weak.
Anything else about your time at Blackpool then?
Not really, no.
Did you leave before or after Christmas, just to try and put a time on it?
I don't remember, no, I don't remember.
So the next thing would be...
I was still there when the Germans dropped a bomb on North Street Station. I think that was the only bomb they had during the war. So if you can fix that date, I was still there then.
Now, what happened where did you go next? This is where you did go, to number two wireless school at Yatesbury.
At Yatesbury, yes.
Now, tell us about that. What was the setup there?
At Yatesbury, it was the same sort of idea of tremendous number of men being trained wireless. And we'd passed out at 20 words a minute, so we got on to more advanced Morse signalling.
Now, what was that? What was what sort of thing were you on?
I seem to have a bit of a cough.
Now, can you tell us a bit about the setup at Yatesbury, how it was organised?
Well, we had very large classrooms. They weren't hangars, but it was the wireless school. Very large classes, and lots and lots of trestle tables, and hundreds of men sitting there with earphones on their ears, and somebody sending messages. The instructor would be sending the messages, we would be taking down the messages. And we arrived there being able to receive 20 words a minute, and we gradually worked up in the months we were there to about 60 words a minute.
Now, how did you do it? Because that sounds really difficult, 60 words a minute. I mean, what were the secrets of being so fast?
The receiving had to become completely automatic. In other words, you didn't think, have to stop, wait and think, now what's that? What is didadidit? It had to be completely automatic. You didn't have to think at all. You just read it.
And you found it, you could do it, obviously.
Well, I applied myself, yes, and I passed the test. I passed this test. I passed out as a wireless operator, 60 words a minute in time.
Now,
yes.
Was there anything else you were learning while you were at the number two wireless school at Yatesbury?
I don't think I was learning anything more. No.
And how long were you there?
I think I must have been there about 4 months.
Again. So 4 months at the...
Sorry?
You were at Blackpool 4 months as well.
I think I was at Blackpool about 5 months, I would think. 5 months, yes.
So what was your next place posting?
Next, I was posted to the gunnery school because I was going to be a wireless operator air gunner. At that time, the RAF were combining wireless operating with air gunnery because of the demands for people of wireless ops and gunners. And I was posted...
Now, where was it?
I was posted to Porthcawl. Porthcawl. Stormy Down, Porthcawl.
In Ireland?
No, Wales, Cardiff. Cardiff, Wales.
Sorry.
South Wales.
And take me through your gunnery training. What did they do there?
Well, I'm afraid this was a bit of an eye opener when you consider that we were going into a war, and we had to be highly technical. We had to be extremely efficient. We had to have marvelous equipment to defeat the Germans. And what did we have when we got there at the gunnery school? They had a few Whitley bombers, which more or less ancient monuments, Whitley bombers, and they didn't have hydraulic operated turrets at all. They had a sort of turret where you pulled out, if you wished to turn the thing, you had to pull out the bolt and then turn the turret round and then put the bolt into, fix it in a fixed position. No hydraulics at all. This was quite dreadful. But however, we did see the drogue. Another aircraft would trail a drogue which we would fire at, and I passed that.
Now, what were you firing? What guns were aboard the Whitley?
Well, there would be a 303 gun.
You don't know which one?
.303. I imagine a Browning, but I don't know really. I know there were.
You didn't learn the workings of the guns then, the Lewis, Browning.
We did on the ground. We did take it to pieces, clean it, and put it together again. Yes,
the Browning.
Yes, we did. Yes, we just had a smattering. That's only just a smattering.
So you were more introduced to it than actually learnt it?
We were introduced to it. Yeah, we had at least to be able to sight the gun up on the approaching aircraft, shall we say, and you had to register a certain number of hits, a percentage of hits.
Now, what about the firing at drogues? Tell us about that. What was it like?
Firing of what?
Firing at the drogues, the towed drogues.
I thought it was a little bit dangerous because the drogue was really fairly close to the aircraft that was towing it. But at least we were firing directly, shall we say, astern, and there was no excuse for hitting the aircraft really, because we would only have the drogue in our sight. Yeah, so it was nothing very clever about it at all.
Were you learning things like deflection shooting, or was that not really necessary? You know, shooting ahead of something, because that's a secret of shooting, I suppose.
I don't really think we had very much chance to introduce deflection. I don't think so, really, no.
Were there any simulators to practice aerial gunnery on the ground, you know, sort of to practice things?
Well, there were simulators in as much as we did aircraft recognition exercises.
Tell us about that.
Well, we would sit in a room, and the ceiling would be painted blue, shall we say, and there would be aircraft all hanging from the ceiling, and lots of clouds and the aircraft hanging from the ceiling, and we would spend our time in recognition more than anything. We didn't have any simulation or anything like that. We didn't practice sighting on the ground at all, no.
Anything else you did at Stormy Down or Port Cow?
Well, we were only there about just about a couple of weeks, I would say, and during that time the weather was so jolly bad that the storm blew down these tents. This is where I say our war effort was really pathetic. The tents in which we had been put into ripped to pieces in the gale, and they fell down. They were ruined.
Were you in them at the time?
We were in them, yes.
What do you remember about that?
Absolutely appalling. This wet morning, we woke up and found that the tents had all fallen down. It was quite dreadful. Dreadful. Our war effort. They were 1914-1918 equipment.
Now, what happened next then? Anything else happened while you were there at the gunnery school?
Not really, no. The weather was dreadful, and we did go down to the town to Porth Call once or twice, and every time we were down there, it was so dark, it was so wet, that we didn't even see anyone around, and we came back. It was quite dreadful that time of the year. No fun at all.
And you qualified as a gunner, so you're now what rank were you?
Now, we then are given our sergeant stripes. And as you know, we were given sergeant stripes. It really was to be because if we became a prisoner of war, we were safeguarded from, I believe, having to work, the Germans putting us to work. And also, we would get a little bit, not respect so much, but we will be treated with little more care than if we were just an ordinary plonk.
So where did you go from there?
Where did I go from there? Gosh. Well, I was posted then to one or two, First of all, I went up to Cranage, which is near the big railway centre in near Wolverhampton there, whatever, Cranage. Yes, I can't even remember exactly where. Near Wolverhampton, actually, Cranage. And then I was flying in Ensigns. I was supposed to be doing a job now. I passed out as a wireless operator. They didn't want any gunners there, so I flew in an Ensign, and I was working the wireless equipment. If the pilot wanted a course to steer, I was capable of getting a course to steer. All right. I remember too also at Yatesbury, we just passed, I flew there for the first time in the RAF, and we had Dominies. They used to do the Channel Islands flight, the Dominies. I flew there.
That was your first flight?
My first flight, and I was put on the set. Tune in the set to this frequency, which I did, and somebody answered it. I don't know what they said, but once you got contact, that was good enough. It was as quick as that.
And what do you remember of your first flight in a Dominie? What did you think of it?
Well, it was just a 10-minute flight that you'd have. You go through a fair sometime, and for a pound or 30 shillings, they take you up for a little flight, just one circuit of the dome and down. That seemed to be my first flight.
It was just like that.
Like that. Oh, they didn't waste time and money.
Now, do you know what the unit was at Cranage? Was it a...
I can get my flying logbook, which I should have had.
Now, we've just looked up, and that was at the number 2 school of aerial navigation, number 2 squadron, School of Aerial Navigation at Cranage, when you were flying the Ensigns. What did you think of the Ensign as an aircraft?
I thought it was a very safe aircraft. It was just a very slow aircraft, more safe. I think that's the real thing. I felt about it. Yes, low landing speeds.
And anything you remember about those flights?
Nothing particularly. No, nothing really. They were very straightforward. The only danger I found at Cranage was that the petrol bowser now and again would get stuck. They would cross the runway in those days, rather slack discipline this. The bowser would cross the runway and it would sort of break down in the middle of the runway, and aircraft coming in were an absolute menace. And I think possibly one of these Ensigns did have a little accident with the bowser one day. But nothing untoward, no.
And so what's the next thing you remember, the next place you went? Is this when you went to Prestwick?
Then I was posted to Prestwick. That's for air and sea. What have I got it in there, what it is?
Well, it says number 3, radio TS. I don't know what TS stands for.
Something school, radio, something school. That was for air and sea contacts. In other words, I think it was establishing contacts with ships. It was a very short course. I didn't seem to learn much, and I don't quite know what I was supposed to learn there, perhaps. But I know we had one little accident, which rather worried me and worried the pilot too, because he flew between the land and one of those islands up there, I can't remember what it was, and took the aerial, a lighthouse it was, and he took the aerial off the lighthouse, and we arrived back at base of our aerodrome with all this aerial wire on our tail. And he said to us, don't mention this to anybody, don't mention this to anyone. And we didn't, and we heard nothing more.
And that was a very short course.
Very
there.
Short, yes.
And what's the next thing you remember?
I'll have to look at my flying logbook.
It looks like that's when you went to Stormy Down, from the look of that. But then you
no,
go to...
No, I went to... I think I went to Stormy Down before, I think, I went to...
It's a bit... It just depends on what whether this is right or not.
No, look at my logbook when you had to register every flight you took.
Right. But the next thing then is you seem to have gone to Moreton-in-Marsh.
Moreton-in-the-Marsh.
And that was... I don't know what that... Operational Training School or what was that?
Moreton-in-the-Marsh was where we were sent now. We were all passed out and we were sent to crew up. We were introduced, or we met people who had been collected together, all higgledy-piggledy. We didn't know each other, but we had social chit-chat, and if we took a liking to somebody, we volunteered to become one of his crew. And there we were crewed up, and that was the process.
And who did you meet there? Who did you meet anyone in particular there?
No, I met no one in particular, but the fellows that I finished with, the fellows that I met there, we agreed to form a crew.
And do you remember their names, or did they stay with you a long time? Is it the sort of thing you remember?
They stayed with me. Unfortunately, people fell out at odd times through one thing and the other. For instance, our pilot name was Shepherd, and he'd done about 20 operations, and he was hit by a piece of flak. He was injured, taken off to Ely Hospital, and we were very fortunate at that time because we had a second pilot. We didn't normally carry a second pilot. They were too scarce. We had a second pilot, and he took over. But I have a story about that.
Well, that's later.
That is
Anything
later.
Else happened at Moreton-in-the-Marsh?
No. At Moreton-in-the-Marsh, all we seemed to do was that we crewed up, and then the pilot used to do circuits and bumps because he was now being converted to piloting a Wellington bomber. And now I was now flying in a Wellington bomber.
Now, what did you think of the Wellington? Because, you know, it's quite a famous aircraft. What were your first impressions of the Wellington?
Well, my first impressions were, if it was the 1C, which I believe is one of the very early ones, it was a little bit primitive. It didn't have the powerful engines that the further ones, the Mark III. I think we then flew Wellington Mark III, which was quite a powerful engine, and there were even more powerful ones. The Wellington was a very good, reliable aircraft. Very, very powerful, very, very reliable. And it used to fly back very badly damaged. It was of geodetic construction, and it would fly back with most of its fabric ripped off, but it would still be flying. It was a remarkable aircraft.